and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. Online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and wherever you get your podcast. I'm Ailey Packham and we are in your ears in association with the magnificent Flowers Unlimited. Well then, it's been a strange week on Planet Albion. Really, if you're 2-0 up after 86 minutes, you should probably go on and win the game, especially against a team that is bottom of the table. But don't worry, Dr. Brighton will see you now. On Wednesday night, the draw at Wolves, though, was another point to the total, and there were certainly some positives to take out of the game, most notably with Evan Ferguson getting his first goal since November last year. On Wednesday night, Liverpool were our visitors, and we looked to progress to the quarterfinals of the League Cup, it was the Reds, though, who edged an entertaining affair, and it is them that progress to the next round. However, today we get the chance to put that right as we head to Anfield, and there is a chance that some of our walking wounded may be back. They say don't look at the table until after 10 games. Will it be safe to look at 5 o'clock today? In other news, Fabian Hertzler has been nominated for the Premier League Manager of the Month award for the second time this season after an unbeaten league run in October. If he wins this, though, it'll be a unique double after women's boss Dario Vidicic picked up the WSL gold. Joining me today is not Alan Wares, who is just home from his honeymoon. So I have roped in Justin Brentnell, and alongside Justin, I'm delighted to welcome back a man who's not been here since we were in the dungeon. He's an actor, he's a director, he's an expert on Belgian beer. It's welcome back to Mr. Chris Beaumont. Hello, Chris.
It's great to be here, yeah. It's long time no see.
We worked out that it's probably been about 12 years, so... if you want to cart back to 12 years ago, where we were and what division we were in...
Well, 12 years ago, I mean, we were looking at our first season at the Amex, weren't we, I think?
It was just
about the first season there, which was quite extraordinary. And I still get a shiver up my spine when I walk into that stadium and I sit down, I stand there, I look across the pitch and I see the fans, and it was all just so different from with Dean and Gillingham And a bit of that magic from the Goldstone just began to re-emerge. And that's what's been carrying us through.
Yeah. Now, Justin, welcome back. It's been a while since you were on. A week.
Nice to see you guys.
Justin, you sound a bit like Barry White.
Yeah, I had a night out last night. I had a couple of beers, but it seems to have lowered my voice.
Well, it's a good job that you've brought a stunt double with you today. Hello, Woody.
Hi.
And so we have a young Mr. Brentnell with us today. Now, a season ticket holder at the Amex, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah.
How long have you had that?
I didn't have it last season.
You didn't have it last year, so this is your first time. But I mean, we used to see you, and you basically used to like stop your dad from drinking beer after the game. So, you know... We're not talking to you. So anyway, I mean, Justin, it's interesting what Chris was saying about that spine tingle you get when you go into the Amex, and you know, we were talking about with Dean last week and our return there a couple of weeks ago. It's been a journey, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has definitely, and. I think it's only when you go to with Dean you kind of can grasp it in terms of where we were and where we are now. The Amex just goes from strength to strength. I get a bit of a tingle now when I see that massive bar that's being steadily built opposite.
You can see it from your house, though.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Chris, it's been a while since you've been on. So let's just recap. Why don't you just tell us who you are and tell us about your Albion supporting history?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm Chris Beaumont, and for 10 years, I was landlord of the Grey's Pub on Southover Street. But before that, and after that, now I'm actually an actor. And I've been working in theatre and TV and film work for well over 40 years now. That's scary. And basically, we took a 10-year sabbatical from being in theatre when we had the pub. And that's where I first met Adi in there. I think one you came in as a
customer. Who knew? You met someone, yeah, someone met me in a pub.
Can't believe it. I've always been an Albion supporter. And I think looking back at it now, my first game was at the Goldstone in about 1969.
You're aging yourself.
I know, and even that's easily done. It was an evening game against the mighty Plymouth Argyle, and it was an incredibly exciting 0-0 draw. I seem to remember, but after that, you know, for some reason, I came back again and again and again. I did drop out from actually seeing the club. For a few years, because I used to do a lot of touring and I was on the road all the time, and so I just was never available to be able to get to games. And for quite a period, I was out. In fact, I only went to Gillingham, I think, once. But then back at the Withdean, you know, got back in there again, and I've been trying to support them ever since.
Yeah. You know. Now, Chris, this is going, don't take this the wrong way. Okay, but when we have people on the show of, shall we say, a certain vintage, and, you know, we often talk about, you know, who was your favourite player, and quite often it's always going to be someone from that era. Mm. But would you revise that now when you're looking at the team that we've got playing with, you know, playing at the highest level for the longest time we ever have, the highest league finishes we've ever had, the most expensive squad we've ever put together, and then you look at the players from back then. So you're talking about the Mark Lawrences, the Peter Wards. Would any of the players now trump them in your mind?
I think they probably would, actually, and I think that largely comes down to the South American influence. There's a certain panache and excitement about those, and also some of the Southern European players. I mean, I never forget seeing Vicente for the first time. I mean, he was an amazing footballer through and through. Yeah. But also more recently, when we saw the trio come in of Sarmiento, Buonanotte and Enciso, I'll never forget watching the three of them come on as subs, what was it now, 2 years ago in one of their games. And the opposition just didn't know what to do with them. They ran at them. They were all over the place, and you could see the terror on the opposition defence's faces. And watching players like that playing for us is really exciting. I mean, we've got great players throughout the club now, and I mean, who'd have thought that Danny Welbeck would be banging them in for us? I mean, he's wonderful. And yes, of course, I can go back to players like Willie Irvine and Kit Napier and people like that back in the early 70s, who were great. They were good footballers, and of course Peter Ward. But now we've got a certain, there's a style, there's a flair about the players in the squad at the moment, and I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, Justin, would you agree with that?
Oh yeah, totally. I think it is so difficult to compare different eras in football because the game was so different back then. But I think it is that since it kind of started around 92 when the Premier League started, and it was this influx of foreign players, and it did change something, and it's happened more and more and more. And now kind of the style of a lot of teams in 2024 is it's so much more about dribbling and tricks, and it's almost the creativity, the artistic side of football we see a lot more of.
Yeah.
And there are plenty of players in our squad that just bring a smile to your face when you see that level of skill and talent on the pitch.
I mean, obviously, Chris, when you're talking about that and the skill levels that Justin's just talking about, you've got to look at the pitches now as well.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, the Amex pitches and others in the Premier League are far superior to... I mean, we used to think that the Goldstone, actually. I remember on that Wednesday night against Plymouth Argyle as a kid, the first time I ever saw that Goldstone pitch, I thought, wow, that's great, it's lush, it's green. Actually, that's quite amazing compared to my school football football pitches. but now, I mean, the Amex, I mean, it's like playing on carpet.
Yeah. Actually, I'm going to have to ask you this, Woody, aren't I? So basically, we used to have this thing about, like, this is what Chris was just saying there. You know, when you first come out of the vomitory, and you see the pitch for the first time, what did you think?
I mean, I can't really remember, but if I had to guess, probably a shock, least.
I've come out of there and seen quite a few shockers, to be honest. But so that's another story for another day. Okay, well, let's just... I'm not going to go too much into detail on the Wolves game last Saturday, because it feels like a lifetime ago now. We've had another game since then.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there was some standout points for me. Obviously, there's a few changes to the team. There was a lot of confusion as the teams came out, and there was no Lewis Dunk, who was named in the starting lineup. So he got injured in the warm up.
He really shouldn't do warm ups, you know, that boy anymore.
At his age, yeah, bring on the thing. So basically, Eagle stepped in, and actually, Justin, Eagle's been great this season, isn't he?
Yeah, he's. It was Van Hecker first and then Dunk with the injuries, and yeah, he's been sound. I can't fault him. I wasn't his biggest fan towards the end of last season. There was the home game
about you.
There was the home game against Manchester United, and I kind of thought, you're not up to it, are you? But he's been proving me wrong this season.
Yeah, I agree.
So
absolutely
very
agree
with his performances.
Yeah, he's a real chieftain tank.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Obviously, he's not unbreakable, but he looks it.
Yeah.
And he's there, and his position is getting better as well now. Really, really enjoying watching it. And thank heavens we've got him, because there has been this kind of rotation of injuries between now Dunk, and there was Van Hecker, and Webster, of course.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that's what I was saying, you know, I mean, strength in depth is what we need.
Yeah, I'm still a little bit concerned, though, about the defensive depth. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. I mean, we look to the 21s and seeing who's coming through there, and there are some good defenders coming through, but there's not too many central defenders. I think Noel Atom is one that's been mentioned, but no one seems to have seen him. I think he's injured at the moment. I mean, obviously spending the amount of money that we did in the summer and not to have too much defensive backup, was that a concern for you, Justin?
I think it was, but there was a guy from I think it's PSV Boskalgi. He didn't get the transfer. It didn't go through, but he's coming into towards the end of his contract. I think recently he's been quite verbal about saying how disappointed he was not to get the move. So. Mm. It's possible that could happen in Christmas, because they'll have a
decision.
He's
saying it's not going to happen at Christmas. There was something in the media there this week. Okay. So he's saying if anything is going to happen, it's going to be next year.
Yeah.
I mean, I was reading that he might, some pre-contract talks might come through in January, but he will be staying at PSV for the season. But he sounds as if he's desperate to come here.
Yeah.
He really does.
Wow. When you look at it shows you how far we've gone, that the teams that like regularly compete in Europe's top competitions and the players, they want to come here.
Yeah.
It's incredible. They'd rather come here than play in the Champions League. And like, actually, we've got some players out on loan who are playing the Champions League, which is an interesting thing. But okay, I mean, the game itself, I mean, we've played Wolves already this season, and so we probably shouldn't have been surprised. And obviously, I mean, there is the headline thing of being 2-0 up at 86 minutes, and like, and our shooting was fantastic in this game. We managed to shoot ourselves in both feet, the game in the League Cup against them. They showed that they were resilient and they wouldn't roll over, and you know they obviously we were saying after that game that this is not a team that looks like it is bottom of the league, and you know, when you look at the fixtures that Wolves have actually had, they've had a really, really tough opening to the season, and there is certainly I've been really impressed with them both times actually.
Yeah, with the style of play and the technical ability available to them, you can see it in every time they touch the ball and get the ball. It's been difficult for them. I think that the fact that they had that very difficult start to the season has had an impact on their confidence a bit. Mm. And as we know, confidence is everything.
So they picked the what's becoming the classic away team tactics for the non top six in the Premier League against us, which is it's the low block and it's trying to hit us on the break.
Yeah.
And I thought they were doing that pretty well, actually, in the first half. I think they didn't look an attacking threat at all, but they were. I kind of thought it would be, it would, it's kind of going towards a draw, but then Welbeck kind of, they make a mistake and we're on it. We pounce on it, a couple of brilliant passes, and Welbeck is being Welbeck again. The section of the match in between our first goal and the second goal, I thought they were pretty poor because they didn't know whether to do a low block. They didn't really push forward that much. They were sort of okay. We then got the second, and you could see them then. It was like, well, it's going to be 4 or 5 nil, or we're gonna get back in this. So they just whacked everyone forward and let's try and get a goal. And when you do that, you gamble, and their gamble paid off spectacularly well.
Yeah, I'm still incredibly annoyed. It's like, I mean, obviously they're. But, well, let's talk about the Welbeck goal first, because it's like, you know, we've been talking about Danny a lot on this show recently. I did get pulled up on a comment I made on the show last week about Danny scoring more goals for us now than he has for any other club. He's not quite done that. Basically, Wiki is not my friend. So he's actually 2 goals off what he would be. I think it's actually 1 goal off now, actually, from the total he got from United, because there was a few goals he scored in the League Cup and stuff. But this guy, I mean, I've thought, I'm going to use the phrase again, he's a Rolls Royce of a footballer, Chris.
He is. He not only does he train himself into oblivion, he really, you know, he's got such stamina. His trouble with his early career was his injuries. He was out for a lot of the time, and I think people began to look at him as a bit of a sick note, which is unfortunate. And he didn't get the opportunities he should have done. I know you know Arsenal, well, you know, didn't happen, but he is a stylish footballer. He knows how to read. He knows how to read a game when you're going forwards, and he can see space. That goal on Saturday last week against Wolves. Yeah, you know, he ran into that space perfectly. Unfortunately, he seems to be developing a bit of a relationship with Rutter.
Yeah.
And that could pay dividends this afternoon, but we'll go on to that later.
Yeah, I mean, Justin, I was looking through the stats and just trying to find out some stuff. And this is still really, really annoys me, okay? I'm going to put it out there now that Jorginho Rutter is still only credited with 2 assists this season. And that he has not been credited for the assist for Danny's goal, winning goal against Spurs. And that is criminal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't understand that. And it made me very cross. And I actually spent 10 or 15 minutes on my phone going through slow motions to try and understand what it was, and I cannot see it.
At which point Woody was trying to get you to go home, right? But yeah, okay, so I mean, 1-0 up was a good time to score just before half time, and and then we had other chances in the game, but the one that did go in the back of the net was that one from Evan Ferguson, his first goal since the 25th of November last year. And I'm just, there's 2 things that are really delighting me about. A, obviously, seeing him back on the score street, seeing him confident, taking those chances, and it was a sublime finish. But also the fact, and we're going to come on to Tariq again in a minute, but the fact that Tariq was actually so dominant running down that, to see him back, because I've been trying to work out how he's actually going to get on the pitch and get any minutes, and I was thinking that perhaps his future might lay elsewhere, but to see him out on the pitch and showing that turn of pace that he always used to have that scares the bejesus out of defenders, and to set up the goal, it was just a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, Tariq seems to have found his pace again, and that's what's really terrifying defenders, as you say. He looked great the other night. He looked great against Liverpool, and he's got a confidence. I mean, you know, he'll always have that thing. He's only a little guy, and he's going to get bounced around. And unfortunately, that's what happened against Liverpool the other night. He did get jumped on a couple couple of times, and it led to goals as well. But as a defender, as a good tackling defender, he's great. He really gets in there. But once he starts streaking down that wing, you know, and players, be it Veltman or whoever might be out there on the right ish with him, they know where he's going to be now again, and he's looking confident. I like the lad.
We're going to touch on this again in a minute, Justin. The headache that Fabian's going to have when everyone's there. I did a show, a Liverpool show this week. And they said, so what's your best team then? And I go, I don't know. I've got absolutely no.
But what a great headache to have, you know. Yeah. And I think that one of the good things about the club at the moment and the way it's being run is that, you can see it, Danny Welbeck is a classic example. The players are happy.
Yeah.
They're enjoying playing for Brighton and Hove Albion.
Yeah.
And that runs right the way through the club. And I mean, I bumped into Danny on Hove lawns one day, and just out walking, but he was smiling all over. He was just there, and he was happy to shake hands and say hello. I mean, great. You know, that applies to every player. And I mean, you get one or two who aren't going to be happy about it, but then you're going to get one or two players who only see the Albion as being a stepping stone to something else, and they're going to want to move on.
Okay. Well, just before we do move on from this game, I do want to talk about, obviously, footballers are human, okay? And we're having to say this a lot on the show at the moment, just to remind people that they are human, they have lives, okay? They make mistakes on the pitch sometimes. And the dog's abuse that Mats Wiefer got after... Okay, you've got a 4-1 and you hit the one, it's not a great look for you, let's face it. And it probably ended up costing us the 3 points. But it was a mistake. And we still had time to rectify that mistake. They still had to go up the other end and score. So I mean, I just don't understand what the amount of abuse that these people are getting on socials at the moment. He's another one that's had to come off.
Yeah, I mean, he's come off his social medias entirely, apparently, because it's all got so abusive. And we mustn't forget that when he made that run forward, and with the position we were in, three other players ran up there alongside him. Now, if you'd have been looking at good game management, those three players, if they'd have had their heads screwed on in the right place, they might not have all gone up there with him. One, maybe, because he would have had one person. But three players were then taken out of our defence when all of their players were in our half, you know. So suddenly you're outnumbered immediately.
I think that's more to do... I'm not going to take that one, unfortunately. No, okay. I don't necessarily agree with that, because basically the way... that move came about was because Brian Grude's absolutely fantastic win back that set the ball in motion, and it basically caught Wolves by surprise. And you know, you could take it to the corner flag, you could, but I mean, when you've got a 4-1, if you take it to the corner flag in that position, you're going to get the same abuse.
That's not actually what I'm saying. There were four players who were taken out of our back line. If two of them had just thought, okay, I've forgotten who was up there running. You're probably in CISO or something like that. You know, he's likely to score if he gets the ball. I can just sit back a little bit just in case he doesn't.
Yeah.
I think as well that the Wolves players didn't run back. They'd given up.
No, that's right.
So it's very... If you can see they've given up, they're not doing any running, they've got their head in their hand, they know you're going to score, it's just very tempting to run for everyone to do it, because it's like...
Everybody wants to score.
Yeah, yeah. and it was for the third goal, and so it was... I think the key defender was who was out of position was Estupiñán, and actually I think he's probably as guilty as Wiefer for that goal, because he was vastly out of position, and that's where coming down our left, that's where.
Okay.
I mean, I do think it's possible that, I mean, Mats Wiefer has got a lot to learn about playing in the Premier League. Yeah. He's probably looked the most lightweight out of all the summer signings. And some players take to the Premier League a lot more quickly than others. I mean, you've only got to look at Brian Grueder. And I mean, he's a natural Premier League player, yeah. And he's looked it immediately from the last couple of games. You agree, don't you, Woody? I can see that. Yeah, you know. Yeah.
Okay, well, you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are brought to you in association with the brilliant Flowers Unlimited. And you can go and get your flowers, you can get yourself a discount from Flowers Unlimited, from Portland Road and Hove. Go, and actually we've got some brilliant competitions the wonderful Dave Costa is going to give us some prizes coming up to Christmas, so look out for those in the next couple of weeks. We've got a couple of things on the notice board. Our good friend Kieran Maguire is bringing his Price of Football podcast to Brighton's Unitarian Church on the 15th of November. The show is a benefit for the Samaritans, so obviously a very, very, very good cause, and one that I know that Kieran does a lot of work with as well. Tickets for the show, they cost £23, and they can be bought from the Eventbrite website, which is www.eventbrite.co.uk. And as luck would have it, Kieran will be joining us on the show next week to tell us all about it. Because, like, Kieran, he's never on the radio, or he's never on the telly. But never. Another recent guest, Mr. Mark Brailsford, he's let us know that he now has added the end of year spectacular, which is taking in like Sault Dean and Brighton. They've added another show on the 21st of December in Worthing at the rooms in the Gilbourn Centre. Tickets just go to their website and they will be available there. So, and also, if you've probably seen it on the socials, but there's some sort of awards thing going on, and and we've been nominated. So if you see it, make sure you tick that box that says Albion Roar and win us the Ballon d'Or or whatever it is. Would you like to win a Ballon d'Or?
Woody, you're probably better.
Yeah.
Chance than me.
The one person in the room is likely to win it. Yeah.
Would you turn up to the awards, though? That's the question.
Yes, we would never be disrespectful, even if Woody wasn't on the shortlist.
Well, that's a free bar. Of course you can. Okay. There is a certain thing. There's a curse of the Manager of the Month award. Now, we went through October unbeaten. Fabian's been nominated for the second time this season. Are we pleased or are we worried about this?
Worried.
Worried. Always worried. Yeah.
You see, this is the thing with football supporters. Let's suck on first.
Yeah.
Like, always put the shirt on last. And, always leave through the lap. Through the left door. That's what you have to do, and and always go to the same pub until you lose. That is, you know, these things are very, very important. But I mean, it's also that Dario Vilicic, the women's team manager, he has actually picked up the award. And again, this just goes to show that the women's team is going from strength to strength this season. And I'm absolutely thrilled, Justin.
Yeah, it's great to see them towards the top of the table, challenging. I think it is mirroring what Tony Bloom and Paul Barber and their strategies with the men's, and it's that gradual climb. And where the men's team have Milner and kind of Welbeck, they've got Kirby and Paris, and they've come in and they've just lifted it. I think it's, and you can see that those two are top level.
Yeah, and those two signings alone is piqued a lot of interest for people who said they'd never go to a women's game, Chris.
Yeah, no, they really have. And signing quality and experience quality of that type, it does, as you say, it mirrors exactly what we're doing with the men's. And that kind of experience is reflected in the other players as well. They all want to learn, all footballers want to learn. If you don't, then there's something you're doing very wrong. And so the younger players will be watching them and watching those players and talking to them. And little hints and tips of advice that you wouldn't really even think about or even register, but they filter in. And that's exactly what Nikita and people will be doing.
It's wonderful. Okay, and the women's team, they are at home tomorrow, that's Sunday, to Leicester Crawley. And they obviously have a game coming up at the Amex, I think, is it next week? a week after.
Yeah.
Against West Ham. So that will be if get yourself along and go and support the girls. Okay. One thing we did this week is we also went along to the Annex again on Wednesday, and it was all right for you, Justin. You can just walk. bearing in mind you live like about 500 metres away from the stadium, but there was some transport fun and games, Chris.
Oh, my Lord. I tell you, getting there, yeah, fair enough. You pick up a bus in town, there's no problem. But coming home, I'm sorry, something really has to be done. I know Brighton and Hove buses really aren't interested in putting extra buses on their timetable. But I was a classic example, stood up at the top car park at the bus stop there waiting for a 25, and it took an hour and 25 minutes before one came. And I spoke to one of the senior stewards who said, well, I'll tell you something. He said, 15 minutes before the game, there were four buses lined up there at the top car park, all empty. And as the whistle blew, they all pulled away. When he told me that, when I'd been there about an hour and 10, I just wanted to kick something. I mean, it's poor. It's very poor. Yeah. I don't know. PB, he's said in the past he can't do anything about Brighton and Hove buses. But and I know that the club do fantastic things, with regard to park and rides and all that. And I understand that the train situation was equally as bad.
Yeah, the train situation was quite bad. I mean, bearing in mind it was a game that was during half term. I took my 12-year-old daughter, who doesn't come very often, to the games. And I think there was a lot of other people that took advantage of the fact that it was like decent price tickets. It was half term. Mm-hmm. The fact that it was a 7:30 kickoff instead of a 7:45. That 15 minutes, it's just 15 minutes. It's nothing in time, but it makes an awful lot of difference, particularly when you're trying to get home from somewhere. And I think there's a lot of people that did all bolt for the exit doors at the final whistle rather than hang around like we would normally do and wait for the crowds to die down. But the queues for the trains were going right around the east stand, so it was like it was like there were some late nights and some very tired children the next day.
Yeah, and a very tired wife with me as well.
What are you saying? Okay, the game itself then, there was eight changes for both sides, actually. Even with the eight changes, it still looked like a very strong side, actually.
It was a strong side. I think there was a question there that clearly Liverpool were going to play what essentially was a second 11, but there was potentially an opportunity for us to go in with Welbeck, go in with Baliba, Matoma. And so I found it interesting that there's still too much Premier League ambition for that sort of thing. So we did the same as Liverpool.
Yeah,
we paid a second 11 too. But it actually, on paper, and actually when they played, it was a good team. It was a good team.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. And I've often said on the show that your job as a football club is to be as successful as you can, to win every competition that you enter, and just basically try and be successful, right? And so when you're starting putting out weakened teams in these competitions, it kind of does show a little bit of a lack of ambition, particularly for clubs like Brighton. But then on the other side of the coin, Chris, you've got the fact that you've got this massive squad now of very, very talented players who aren't necessarily getting minutes.
Mm.
And when we are picking up these minutes, you want them to be match fit and ready to go. So you've got to try and balance it, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also Hertzler would have been very aware of the fact that we have Liverpool again today. I think we'll see a very different team come out today. But from the off anyway, when you look at the bench, whether it's, I don't think there's any such thing with us now really as a first and a second 11 out of the senior squad, because they're all first team players, or they should be, and you've got to keep that balance of keeping players happy, and when there are players, I mean, Jason Steele hasn't played for a while. But, apart from a couple of Willicky passes in the first 5 minutes, he had a great game. Mm. And he pulled off some worldies. Mm. Really did. And, with that their third goal, when he parried that ball away and then it got stuck between people's legs and it was a bit of a mishmash, and eventually Diaz scored. Mm. He pulled off a great save before that, as, in fact, did their second string keeper.
Well, he made a few excellent saves, actually. I mean, we'll come to that one in a second. I wanted to. We mentioned Tarek Lamptey a little bit earlier. Now, I've always enjoyed watching Tarek, and I remember I was fortunate enough to see him during lockdown when the stadiums are empty, it was just weird because this guy was just like, "Where's he gone?" Because it's like when you're actually like. You know, watching the game on telly and watching it in the stadium is a very, very different experience, as we all know. So, I mean, seeing that and seeing the movement and the sheer fear in the players' faces every time we got the ball was absolutely wonderful. But in this game, I think we saw the best and the worst of him.
Yeah, so with Lamptey, I think he's sort of in terms of his career, he seems to be going the opposite way to Kadioglu. And I mean that in respect with Ferdy started as a number 10 and a winger in Holland, and he went to Turkey and he played in various positions, but he kind of settled at right back, and then left back sort of became his position and with the national side as well. So he's sort of come back across the pitch. I've been incredibly impressed with the Lamptey attacking performances that we've seen in the last two games. Very impressed. But I have to say, I don't think a defender, a right back, is his best position now. And I think he needs to be playing further up the pitch.
Yeah.
He needs a Veltman behind him or something.
Yeah. Do you see him as a winger now?
I probably do more, actually. You know, I mean, as I said earlier, he is a great little tackler, but he is a great winger as well, and his lack of physical prowess and height and the rest of it gives him an advantage there. And you often see wingers who are little guys, and that's great. But I mean, you've only got to look at our side as well and think, well, we've got Adingra, we've got Mitoma. You know, they're going to be your first choice wingers, really. And so, where does Tarek fit in a bit? But as we were saying, strength in depth, and you get an injury, you get another knock to Adingra, and suddenly, you know, he's.
Well, this goes back to what you were saying then, though, doesn't it? Because it's a squad game now. You have starters and finishers, and it's like there's no guarantee that everyone's going to start. Anyone's particularly going to start every single game, and you know, and you do need that, but particularly now with five substitutes, you can do that.
Yeah, absolutely. All as what we're talking about, you know, being happy playing at the club, and as long as you understand that it's a squad game, as you understand as a player, you know, if there are players there who are determined that they want to start every game, and if they don't start every game, then they're going to get stroppy about it. I mean, look at Trossard. You know, there was a man who was a classic example of that, and then would throw his toys out the pram. But as long as you're not doing that, and you're happy to contribute, then great.
Okay, Justin, talking about it being a squad game, Julio and Ciso.
Yes. Julio and Ciso. I mean, at the moment, the toys are still in the pram, but you can kind of see him fiddling about with them, weighing them up, kind of juggling them a bit, seeing, you know, maybe he's going to throw. I against Liverpool, I think he ran sort of hot and cold. He was okay, but he wasn't. There's something missing from his game this season,
you're right.
And whether it's confidence, whether it's attitude, whether he's just missing something.
Maybe he's missing the right person playing alongside him, or giving him the right feeds, or whatever. I mean, he loves to run at defenders and then shoot from distance. He's never afraid to have a pop, and I love that. I mean, I wish we would do it more often. And some people will then turn and say, oh, he's over the bar again or whatever, you know. But he is a confidence player as well, you know.
Well, there is a touch of the Roberto Carlos and Ronaldo about this, where like they score one amazing free kick and then they spend the rest of their career trying to replicate it.
Yeah.
And normally hitting the back of the stand in rosette. Mm. But it's... I mean, obviously, he did have a wonderful shot in this game, which just went. The swerve on that ball completely bamboozled Yaros in the goal. Mm. And, it was... Yeah, an interesting one. Okay, well, I mean, Liverpool did take the lead in this game, and it was a goal that not many people saw. Myself included.
Came back into my seat as it happened.
I took my daughter, who doesn't normally come with me, and she was, like, still in the loo when the teams came back out. But obviously, having seen the goal again soon, and it was a sensational finish. Yeah. And there were, like, shades of Izquierdo against West Ham about it as well, wasn't
yes.
there?
Yeah, it was a superb goal, wasn't it? It was brilliant. It's hard to sort of put the blame on anyone. I think with Moda, he maybe could have been a bit tighter, and he's not a defensive midfielder, and he looked like it there. He just wasn't quite close enough. But that's not to take anything away from the goal. It was a very good goal.
Very good goal.
Okay, well, you make a good point there. I mean, let's talk about Jakub Moda. Obviously, not getting much minutes at the moment. The game against Wolves, he started. He probably wasn't his best game by a country mile for us. But I thought he had a really good game against Liverpool.
Yeah, I thought he did as well. And he's a player that since that long injury that he had has taken a long time to come back. I mean, it was an ACL, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and they do knock you. I like Moda a lot. Big Jake, as we call him, you know. You know, he's great. He's and the fact that he keeps on getting selected for Poland all the time. I mean, he hasn't been out of their team now for probably about 18 months, even before he came back playing for us. And he's a good footballer. I like him. But you're right. I think he was out of position there. But I don't think it was necessarily a position he expected to find himself in.
I mean, I think sometimes you've just got to credit a great finish, really.
Yeah,
And, like, hold your hands up. OK, well, Liverpool won that up, and we basically went for it. Massively, we're like right, we're not having that. And there was some fantastic efforts we had, including again the save that from Yaris, where he pushed Adingra's header onto the post, which was brilliant work from Tarek Lamptey.
Yeah, it was great from Tarek Lamptey. I can't fault Adingra for that. I think you can see his head goes right back, and he puts as much power on it as he can. He's aiming for sort of the right place, that just inside the post, and for me that save was world class, because it was fingernails. There wasn't a lot more.
It was a bit of a Gordon Banks
against
Brazil. It was one of those, really. Yeah. I mean, I think that the good thing about the way that we approached the game after their first goal just showed yet again that we're not afraid of anybody anymore. And so it doesn't matter who we're playing, City, Liverpool, whoever. You know, we'll go out there and we're not frightened by them. And I think that's a great testament to the way the club has been getting the squad together.
Well, the boots on the other foot as well, because they're probably more wary of us. I mean, I was again, to go back to this show I was doing with the Liverpool fans this week, and we were actually just talking about literally that. I said, what do you expect? I said, well, we don't go into these games of any fear. I mean, Glenn Murray admitted a little while ago that you know, going to places like Man City, Man United, Liverpool, you know, it was always about more mentally, that it was all about damage limitation. But that mentality is completely gone.
Yeah.
And we're going into these games now thinking we can win them, and there's no reason why. And you know what, we have won them. The only team that we haven't actually got anything from at all is Man City at the Etihad. We've obviously beaten them at the Amex, but we've been to Anfield and won. We've been to the Emirates and won. We've been to Chelsea and won. We've been
to Old Trafford several times
and won. Yeah. So you know that fear factor isn't there anymore, and it's a massive, massive feather in the cap of the management, the players, the psychologists, and everything to change that mentality. And you know, what do you think you can achieve this season? And I'm like, well, I'm going back to my point. We want to be as successful as we possibly can, and we want to win our first ever competition. We want to go back to Europe. I mean, I'm really missing our European trips. It's like, I've got itchy feet. I'm like, why am I not going somewhere this week? It's like, but anyway, so but Liverpool did make it 2-0. There are question marks about the goal. Was it a foul on Turek?
I mean, from our angle, it looked like the Liverpool player had clearly stepped on Lanty's back, and I was very frustrated that the referee didn't say it was a foul. But when we look at the highlights, it does look a bit like maybe it wasn't a foul on him. So,
well, I can't sum up any better than that, really.
No, I can't either. I think it's spot on. But yeah,
I'll tell you one thing that I really enjoyed about this game on Wednesday was there was this bloke, and he was wearing this black outfit, and he had this thing in his hand. It looked a bit like a flag. And he was running up and down the line, and like this bloke, the players on the pitch, sometimes they went beyond the last defender. And you know what he did? He put his flag up. I thought he was trying to hail a cab. It was like, it was absolutely wonderful to see it. And because they're told not to put their flags up now. Mm. It was just delightful to actually see. Because, I mean, when Tarek went through on that one-on-one in the first half, I was convinced the flag was going to go up then anyway. And he got it right. But, I mean, VAR would probably have a look at that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's like going back to the good old days when you see linesmen doing that. You know, I deplore this whole thing of not raising your flag until the phase of the game has finished or whatever the definition is, because there are so many things that can happen in those 15 seconds, you know. But who likes a linesman, eh? I don't know. You know.
I don't know. How many can you name? this is the question. Okay, well, we did pull one back, and it was a dinger after some absolutely scintillating shot from Evan Ferguson, who's really coming back into form. Yeah. And it scared the bejesus out of them.
Yeah, it was a gift from Liverpool, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
It was a bad pass turned into a good pass for us.
It was Kwanzaa who did it, and he didn't have the greatest game, actually, to be fair, because it was deflected off him for Lanty's goal as well.
But yeah, impressed with Ferguson when he's quite far out, and in that position, what you've got to do is one, hit the target, but two, you've got to test the keeper. You've got to really test, and the keeper had a big test, and he couldn't. Because of the quality of the shot, it has to rebound straight back out, because there's not a lot he could do with that. So, yeah.
And Adingra, a great poacher's goal, in effect, really, you know, with the sole of his boot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Simmons is an interesting one, really, isn't he? Because it's like, again, with the strength and depth that we've actually got in the team at the moment. Obviously, I mean, because of the injuries last year, he ended up having to play pretty much every minute of every game, and he looked absolutely knackered.
Yeah.
And so now he's obviously being dipped in and out a little bit more. Is that fair?
I think so. We've mentioned it earlier, but the strength on our wings is quite phenomenal, and we're going to talk about one soon, I imagine. But there's another one, which is Solly March, who he'll be back soon. Cadioglu's been playing a right wing. Tarek Lamptey looks very good when he's in the right wing position. So, and that's just on the right side. On the left, Mitoma, arguably the best winger at the club. It's hard for Adingra to get into the starting lineup, I think. But is he good enough? Sure, of course he is. But we've got a number of those players now.
But the good thing about Adingra is that he can play on both sides. You know, when Mitoma hasn't been there for a few games recently, you know, Adingra was stepping up and taking it on, you know. Yeah. And that's the versatility is what will give him the game time.
Okay, is that person you wanted to talk about, is that Brian Gruder by any chance?
That is Brian Gruder. Well,
yeah. Talk to me about Brian Gruder.
Brian Gruder's performance, so I believe it was his first start.
It was.
And in terms of kind of, if the Wolves match felt like a loss, I came out of the Liverpool match kind of feeling like a draw, because actually, we've lost to Liverpool, it's not the biggest competition in the world, and I've seen something very good, which was Brian Gruder's performance.
Yeah, technically, as far as I'm concerned, it was a draw because I missed the first goal. So.
I totally agree, Jonathan. I really do. I mean, he it's like I was saying earlier about some players taking to the Premier League quicker than others. You know, he's only had that one start, and he's probably played a couple of other appearances as a sub, but you know that he's going to be there, and he's technically brilliant. He's strong, and I think he's got a lot going for him. I really do.
Yeah, and I think he's going to be. I mean, well, Andy Bass, a regular on this show, of course. Out of all the signings that we made, he's gone on record saying he's the one he's most excited about. I think you said the same.
Yeah, I think so. He's got an X factor, and his left foot as well. He was lining up with Nciso, so they were the two for the free kicks, kind of arguing over the ball, debating over the ball maybe. Gruda did take one, and it was better than Ciso's effort. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Ciso, you know, crikey, he had a poor game with his dead ball situations, whether it was corners or free kicks, and but the one that Gruda put in was spot on.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you mentioned the X factor. Let's go to a fella that's got an X in his name, and that was the welcome back for Alexis McAllister.
Nice, wasn't it?
Fair enough. It's what we do.
I was clapping.
I was.
You were too. He will always be loved at this club.
Yeah. I don't know if anyone's actually if you've seen the images post match, and obviously he was going down the touchline when he was first warming up, hugging everyone and high five and everyone, and it was just delightful. And then he went up to Lewis Dunk, and actually, quite frankly, I thought they were going to have to get a room at one point. the amount of love that was in each other's eyes, it was absolutely wonderful. And then basically in the tunnel after the game, he was there just having a chat with, obviously, I mean, the South American contingent. We all know how very close they were, and like here, and they used to socialise with each other all the time. So, you know, it was absolutely wonderful to see that. And, you know, and we said it before on the show that, you know, there's a way to leave a club, and the way that Alexis has done that, and the sheer amount of respect, Moises Caicedo isn't getting that reaction, is he?
No.
Robert Sanchez isn't getting that reaction.
Trossard isn't.
Trossard's not getting that reaction. It's like, you know, he's just been such a special player for us. And, like my love for Alexis is being well documented on here. You know, I mean, how many other World Cup winners can you think of? and not just World Cup winners, players that have won the World Cup whilst playing for the Albion. Like, you know, this is just, you know, when we're like sitting in the rain at Gillingham and on our uppers and nearly going out of business, the fact to have a World Cup winner in your ranks was just such a special thing for us.
Yeah.
And, you know, the love will continue this afternoon at Anfield, I am sure. Okay, well, Tariq Lamptey did pull one back, and they made a very nervous finish for Liverpool. And they, you know, they had to... this is something I don't actually understand, okay, right? So the idea is... They've made eight changes, and they have, brought their that you've got Mo Salah's on the bench, you've got Alexander Arnold,
Nunez.
All of these players. If you're going to rest them, leave them at home, because basically, they've still got to travel down. And it's like, you know, if you want to rest them, surely you should just let them actually rest. I mean, it's the same.
No, I mean, I was surprised, actually. And when Salah came on and Nunez, they made no difference at all to the Liverpool side. In fact, you know, we didn't let...
When Matoma came on, he started doing very well.
Yes, he did.
And that's a little clue for them. I'm getting continually irritated. Two of those minutes, the ball was out of play. There was injury substitute.
And yet, ironically, it happens sometimes.
Yeah.
Last season, we were seeing games going like 15 minutes at a time sometimes. And there needs to be some sort of consistency. Maybe even have an off-field timekeeper in these, like they do in other sports.
Big clock. It stops, you know.
Yeah, that would work. Okay, well, today is the 10th league game of the season. They say don't look at the league table until after 10 games. So, Chris, what's your...
tame, and I'm really pleased that we are where we are. I think considering the number of injuries that we've had as well, the fact that Pedro's been out and people like that, you know, we've been playing really, really well. Some people make questions over certain decisions that Hertzler might have made, but he's a very level-headed man, and he's instilling that. You know, it's the German thing. He's pulling the club together, the team together very, very well. I'm pleased. I at this stage of the season, sixth place. Sixth, yeah. Very happy, actually, and I think that we can probably improve on that.
Yeah, Justin, same question to you.
So, yeah, I'm equally pleased. It's one of our best starts to a season historically, looking at our level. We made a couple of mistakes against Forest and Wolves, losing the lead. Mm. If we hadn't have lost the lead against those two teams, we would be in third place with 20 points, which is absolutely mesmerising. So I agree with Chris. We can get better.
Yeah.
We just want to be a successful, and we want to get back into Europe. And I think it is disappointing that we have gone out of the cup. But it's what it was. You know, when you get to the segment, you're drawing against the big teams. That's what it is. And then you see the teams that are left in the competition, like that burning smell from up the road. But that is actually all we've got time for this week. Amazingly, so thank you so much to Chris Beaumont. Thank you to Justin Brentnell. Thank you to Woody Brentnell. I've been Eddie Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, of course, on a podcast, and in association with Flowers Unlimited. We've come a long way. I'm on a road, baby, it's just mania. I haven't been the same since I was thrown out of the stadium. I can't lie, I did some things I probably should have not. Somewhere in between a madman and a debutante, I've been learning the hard way. I'm just trying to say
baby, I always say